Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sunstone Podcast. I'm this week's host, Stephen Carter. We've been pretty busy here at Sunstone, getting our very first digital symposium ready for the last weekend in July. A digital symposium, you might ask. What the heck is that? Well, due to the COVID-19 virus, we'd feel pretty bad if we accidentally wiped out half the Mormon studies community in one conference. So we're not going to get together physically this year. Instead, we're going to stream the conference live through the Whova app, which you can access on your phone, tablet, or computer on symposium weekend. You can find out more about how the symposium is going to work this year at sunstone.org/2020symposium. As always, we've put together a program of fascinating sessions, but we also know that half the fun of the symposium is catching up with old friends, meeting new friends, and rubbing shoulders with your favorite authors and scholars. So we've put a ton of work into beefing up the social aspect of the symposium. It's not just going to be you sitting in front of your computer all weekend watching people give presentations. We've planned some fun ways for our attendees to get to know each other and interact. For example, we'll have what we're calling opening acts. So before each session, we'll stream a surprise Mormon Studies luminary as they give us a tour of their favorite books, their favorite knickknacks, or art pieces, or I guess if you're really lucky, their food storage. We'll also provide mealtime entertainment, a virtual handcrafters row, and clatches, which is where you can sign up for video conversations with your favorite scholars and your favorite authors and your favorite podcasters and creators. Anyway, come and join us this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. Again, head over to sunstone.org/2020symposium to learn more. I got to talk with Jana Reese last Thursday during the Home-Centered Sunstone Facebook livestream, which happens each Thursday, usually at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, in case you want to come listen. And, as is often the case, I forgot to push the record button until Jana started introducing herself. So, allow me to introduce the episode right now. In case you didn't notice, the COVID-19 pandemic put a halt to all LDS church meetings mid-March. On my birthday, in fact. But last Sunday, some wards and branches reconvened their Sunday sacrament services, though they looked very different from the pre-pandemic services. For example, in the United States, official guidelines mandated that no more than 99 people would be allowed in the chapel, and that all family units need to sit so as to be 6 feet away from each other. And they also discouraged hymn singing. And there are no other meetings being planned at the moment. So no Sunday school lessons, no socializing in the foyers, no uncorrelated discussions in the library. And to me, that sounds like 80% of the church experience is still gone. Which makes me ask the question, just what is it that we want to get out of worship services? And do these kinds of shortened services achieve that thing? And further, is that thing that we want to get worth the risk of infection? Will church ever be the same? We seem to have hit a turning point in the history of worship practices. We're suddenly forced to reassess what our priorities really are, and then figure out ways to meet those priorities safely. In other words, what do we want out of church? To talk about this, I brought Jana Reese on, and now we're going to have her introduce herself.
Well, first of all, I'd say happy birthday.
Belated. Oh, that was 3 months ago.
Okay. Well, it's a pandemic, Stephen. You know, functions differently right now. I would say I am a columnist for Religion News Service, and I'm an author, most recently, of a book called The Next Mormons: How Millennials Are Changing the LDS Church. And I'm currently at work on sort of a sequel book to that with Benjamin Knoll, about the data that we have about people who have left Mormonism and doing fresh rounds of interviews for that book, which are very fascinating and often very emotional.
Let's kind of start this discussion personally. So for you, Jana, what have your churchless months been like? You know, what have you enjoyed? What have you missed? Have you come to any sudden realizations in this quiet Sabbath space?
I like the way you put that, a quiet Sabbath space. I think I was better toward the beginning of the pandemic of thinking about it in that way, of putting everything on pause, reevaluating what is most important. And then things just got really busy just within the last about 4 or 5 weeks. I've been way busier at work. And so that sense of pause has been unfortunately lost. It was interesting though, to have that more reflective time while it lasted. I've done a couple of things during the pandemic. One was that I started keeping a longer journal. My journal for the last 5 years has just been these little snippets.
That's dated. Because you wrote Flunking Sainthood.
Yeah. And then that's been very helpful. I mean, as a historian, I felt like I recognized in late February, this is going to be an interesting time. So it was right around the very beginning of March that I started keeping a longer form journal about what we're dealing with every day and what we're feeling and what we're doing, both the good and the bad. And then the other thing has been that my big kind of pandemic project, if there is such a thing, has been to go through finally the boxes of my mother's that have been in the basement for the last 7 years since she passed away. And I thought when I started that there were like 13 or 14 of them. And then Phil said, actually there are like 29 or 30. And then he posted that on my Facebook and he said, sign the guy who moved all the boxes. Yeah, he's right. There are way more boxes than I thought. And it is taking a long time, but it's fascinating. Like one of the things just like 3 days ago, we found this up here and had that framed. It's my great grandfather's World War I commission. He was a doctor in the war. And so this is his medical commission to serve in the United States Army. I mean, I had no idea we had that hiding in the basement.
So cool.
Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, that's probably my favorite thing that we've found, but there is something very healing about connecting with the past and understanding what the people in my family have gone through, that we are resilient people and that there is that kind of heritage to draw upon. Long answer to your question.
That was nice. And I'm actually specifically interested in if you found anything like in your actual Sabbaths, in your actual Sundays that were different during this time.
We have used some Sundays to connect with family on Zoom, which we have been able to do all along, but really hadn't mm-hmm. taken advantage of. You know, typically with my husband's family, we see them at Thanksgiving every year. We usually see them at least once in the summer. And every other summer, we all go on vacation together. Unfortunately, that was going to be this year, and it's canceled and we're postponed until next year. So there's nothing preventing us from having these family conversations more often, but we just haven't done that. And I've heard that from a lot of families that this has made us all kind of look toward each other a little bit more than we do normally. Yeah. That's so Sundays are pretty quiet here. We're empty nesters now, and that's kind of a different experience than a lot of people are having. I think my heart has gone out most of all to people who have kids at home and had to suddenly homeschool them. You know, we homeschooled for 2.5 years back in the day and under kind of ideal circumstances, right? It's a lot harder when that was never your intention to be a homeschooler mm-hmm. and to have also all of the stress of a pandemic and also trying to get your work done at home at the same time that you, I mean, all of these things, I mean, parents that have been doing that, I'm not telling you anything you don't know because this is good, right? But, you know, I think the parents have really stepped up in a way that is impressive and heroic.
Yeah, I agree with that. One of the things that I particularly got out of my pandemic Sundays was that I got the ability to say, for the past 3 months, I've attended church as often as the most active Mormon in Utah. It's the first time I've been able to say that in quite a few years.
So what have you been doing?
Well, until the pandemic, I went to church like every other week. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of invisible in my ward because I was the only member of my family who attended. And as you know, men without families are weird. Though mm-hmm. men without hats are really cool, just in case everybody was wondering. So I was, sorry, 80s joke. So I was kind of invisible to begin with, and then poof, everybody was gone. All of the fledgling relationships that I was starting to put together piece by piece were just suddenly gone because my ward did nothing. And I kind of regret that because it would have been interesting to see if there might have been other ways for me to, you know, interact with the ward through like online meetings. But I guess we're not going to actually know how things might have gone, at least here in Utah. It seems like I remember reading on your Facebook page that your ward did meet virtually sometimes.
Right. So we, not for sacrament, you know, I don't even think that that is permitted, but we, for a while there, were having something at least every other week, a Relief Society meeting for women, priesthood for men, or Sunday school. We did that a couple of times, which I loved. I think having online Sunday school is pretty engaging, actually, compared to some of the other things that that we could do. Yeah. So, yeah, those were great. And then we got this message that those had been suspended, no explanation given. And that's very frustrating to me. Part of my, I guess, frustration with this situation is that I am the only member of the church in my family, and I'm a woman. And so all of these directives about having the sacrament at home don't apply to me. And having sacrament meeting at home with all of the people, you know, getting your kids to give talks also does not apply to me. And I am not in the minority. You know, there are more people in the church who do not fit that mold of the nuclear family with the priesthood holder than do. And we don't have a plan for the majority of us. We really don't have a workable plan.
That does sound frustrating. And so you felt a basic loss of community during this time mm-hmm. as well, as I have felt. And I've been listening around a little bit to see what people think about that lack of community, about that official, no, you can't, you guys can't meet, because that came down from like the area authority in Utah, at least, saying no meetings,
why? Because I haven't been able to get any kind of good answer as to what the reasoning is.
Right.
Being behind that.
And so being the guy I am, I do think, what could they be thinking? Because Mormons are kind of all about getting together. I don't know. Do you have a theory or do I need to bore you?
Probably both. I don't have a theory, honestly. I don't have a theory. And there's so much sociological research about the importance of being together to promote religiosity. Mm-hmm. Ideally, that happens in the home, and the most lasting source of successful religious transmission is family. But it's also important for us to see each other at church if we want to have, you know, a community that endures and a religiosity that is more than just sort of skin deep. So I am puzzled by that decision. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I have to imagine that there's something, some piece of the puzzle that I simply don't know about, but I don't know what that would be.
Yeah. And it is interesting to me that they wouldn't share that piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
So my little theory is that, one, you get a lot more work out of people when they're together, like physically. And so that, to me, is the reason why the LDS Church had a rule against having sacrament meetings or Sunday school or anything like that put on YouTube or streamed in any way. I actually went and looked just before all of this started. I looked, and there was one ward that I could find that had streamed their sacrament meetings onto YouTube. And there were like four of them. That was it. And suddenly gone. And so it's bizarre to me that there would be a one single unit ward in the whole of America that thought, hey, we should stream our sacrament services for the people who aren't around. And then suddenly it was gone. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that I'm thinking is that you get a lot more work out of people when they're actually physically present. And we all know, well, everybody who studies sociology knows that that the more people sacrifice for an institution, the more loyal they become to it, and the more likely they are to really stick with it. And so I almost think that people enjoyed getting to church and bearing their testimony about how difficult it was to get their family to church that day, but how they were feeling the Spirit so much more now that they had that sacrifice. Mm. And so I get the feeling that if they had let people stream sacrament services, one, I think that attendance would have fallen off by about 10%, because then suddenly people would say, well, you know, honey, we could see the sacrament service. We could all just sit down and watch it, and that would be okay, right? And then they'd see how nice that was, and they'd be like, maybe I'll stick with this whenever it's really hard. And then you lose the attendance, you lose the extra work and things like that. And so I think that the church didn't want to start that precedent. I think they were thinking, people are going to get back together soon, and we really need to maintain this physical presence thing, because it's so integral to what it is to be a Mormon. I mean, that's how we started out, right? We had to get together in order to survive. We were out in the middle of nowhere and trying to build up these communities. And if we didn't get together, we would die. So I think that's deep in our DNA as well. You have to be together. But at the same time, we didn't have any contact, at least not in my ward. We didn't have any contact. I mean, I was looking at the Facebook page. I was looking at the ward newsletters. And unless they were keeping me out for some reason.
Like, quick, everyone, don't talk to Stephen. You know, back to something that you said about the physical presence. I think this is an important point, and we haven't really talked about it. If the church made this decision because theologically they have decided that the physical presence of our religious community in some way reflects the physical real presence of Christ, and that that's vital for what it means to be a religious community, well, let's talk about that. You know, that's an important theological question, and I would love for us to be having those conversations. Why do we get together? And is there something special and different and important about physically being in each other's presence of a Sunday? That's an important conversation that we could be having. I would rather just that we have conversations rather than that decisions come down from on high and are unexplained, leaving everyone to speculate or simply, I don't know. I've had some very interesting conversations with people I know that I would say have, you know, unlike me, grew up in the church, and I'm active in the church, but that's in part because I'm an extrovert, and for me it fulfills a social need. I'm just being honest. You know, I I love people and I have a pretty nice, wonderful ward here where I live. I've talked with other people who, for the first time in their lives, are stepping away from church because they don't have the choice of going to church and saying, you know, this is really nice. You know, people who fall into that second category or the attrition category that you were talking about. And we don't yet have enough of a value added Sunday. I'm sorry to like put it in the market terms of supply and demand, but we haven't given enough thought to what are we offering to people? And as you said, what are we doing here on Sunday? What are we doing with our worship that we couldn't do at home? Good questions.
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. And to your theological idea, it kind of seems like being physically together shouldn't be a theological concern because we do work for the dead all the time by proxy, right? We're constantly doing ordinances that don't require the physical presence of the person who is having the ordinance done for them. Mm-hmm. Why should it be any different over Zoom?
And, you know, I wrote a blog post about Mormon women and the sacrament in which I made this point as well, that why is it that I can't just log on to a Zoom sacrament meeting, see someone else bless the sacrament because I don't have the priesthood, and then eat it myself at home in the company with other people on Zoom who are doing this at the same time? But if we perform vicarious ordinances in the temple and that's not a barrier, why is this a barrier? Can we have that conversation? What is special about sacrament that it needs to be done in person? I'm not saying that it doesn't need to be done in person. I'm saying let's talk about it and have the conversations where we figure out what we believe about the sacrament. We've really never had to theologize, I guess, about what we're doing when we take the bread and now the water. What are we doing?
I have a question for you. Considering your long experience in the church, do you think that question would actually be talked about publicly, institutionally, or are we just going to take whatever comes from Salt Lake?
In an ideal world or the one that we live in?
The one we live in.
The one that we live in. It's yeah. The second. Yeah, it's the second.
Okay, that's too bad. We'll have to have a Sunstone session on it because it's an interesting question, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay, so the question that we're pursuing is, what is it about getting together to worship, especially in the LDS way, that makes it worth it to try going physically now to a building where we distance ourselves, where we wear the mask, where we don't sing, where it's much shorter, where the deacons or the priests are putting on gloves and masks and breaking the bread, I assume, all of these things.
Let's hold up for a second there. Oh. Because, you know, in the church's guidelines that I have seen, hymn singing is not mentioned. It says don't have a choir. But yeah, and I think it also said that the hymnals will be not in the pews. But I don't think it said that we're not going to have any congregational singing. So maybe if you find out that I'm wrong, you should let me know that. If we have done that and we have essentially put the kibosh on congregational singing for the moment, I think that's a good idea. You know, there is some strong evidence that singing is one of the ways in which the virus can spread most efficiently, and we don't really need to be doing that right now. And I say that as someone who loves to sing. Mm-hmm. For me, that is a really important part of spirituality, and communicating for me with God through music is important, but I don't have to do it right now. We can wait. That's one of those things we can wait on. And also with the masks, you know, you talk here about the deacons being gloved, putting on masks. I didn't see that in the guidelines either. It says they may wear a mask. It doesn't say they have to, which is one of the things that I complained about, you know, that everyone should be wearing a mask. Like, that should just be basic. But at the very least, the people who are preparing our sacrament need to be wearing a mask, you know? So have you seen a more recent version of this document than I have, or has there been?
What happened was that I had just read the email from my bishop, and I was thinking that that was the official thing, and it got mixed up in my head. So I'm glad you're here to keep me rooted.
Well, that's, and that's an important point, you know, that it's not necessarily going to be the same interpretation everywhere. There is some latitude in these pretty open guidelines, more latitude than I would like to see, because on the other side, it could lead to bishops who throw caution to the winds and say, you know, let's let's let it all hang out. And or worse, you know, I read about one bishop who essentially does not believe that the virus is real or that it's a threat. And, you know, this is not, we joke about leadership roulette, but we don't want to be playing leadership roulette when the lives of vulnerable people, or even other people who aren't vulnerable because it seems to be an unpredictable virus, are at stake. This is not the time right now.
Yeah. This is funny. This is probably one of the few times when I've heard you say the church really needs to restrict this a little bit.
Yeah, seriously. It's a totally different role for me where I'm saying, church, why now? You know, when you can micromanage every little thing, why aren't you micromanaging our safety? Because that just, you know, shoulder length, not right. The thing we need to be micromanaging. I pointed out in my column that just the week before this was announced by the church had released the 16 approved pieces of art that can be in Latter-day Saint foyers all across the world.
Which, by the way, everybody, they took a vote on. They asked everybody in the church what they thought. Oh, you missed the email? Oh, that's too bad.
I did miss the email.
I guess they'll just have to make the decision on their own. So anyway, as you were saying.
Anyway, if they can micromanage that, why can't we micromanage telling people to wear a mask? That seems so basic. I mean, so let's see. Here, I have something that I read about in Religion News Service. This is resuming care-filled worship and sacramental life during a pandemic. This is essentially Protestants and Catholics. I think there might be an Orthodox or two representative in here who, clergy primarily, who have joined together to say, how do we do this? You know, how do we reopen in the time of COVID, and how do we phase it so that we can be responsive at the local level in all of this? Some very good ideas in this that, you know, we could stand to implement. It sounds like maybe your bishop is already paying attention to this, and maybe mine is too. I don't know. That's one of the curious things about the local situation for us here, because I had the same bishop for 6 years, and then my husband and I went on vacation just after Christmas, and when I came back, I had a new bishop who has just recently moved into our ward. I mean, I hardly know him at all. Very nice guy, but you know, I have no personal relationship with him. And then suddenly this pandemic happens. Like, I cannot imagine what it must be like to be him, to have just moved into our ward, not really know all of the people, and then have this unprecedented global crisis thrust upon him to, you know, try to deal with. So yeah, that's a lot.
He should tap into the smarts and the experience of all the people in his ward, including Jana Reese. I hear she has a blog.
That is not how the structure of our church really, really functions. One thing that is in this guideline actually is helpful, thinking about congregations where maybe you have a person who is tapped to be your congregation's coronavirus coordinator to deal with some of these questions, like, how are we cleaning the building? To assure that this is really safe and it's not just germy 12-year-olds who are, I don't even want to know what they're doing with their hands, right? I mean, all of these different aspects of the virus. How do we bring communion to the elderly or vulnerable immunocompromised people? How do we have youth group online? You know, to have some coordination there. In our culture, it's all the bishop, really. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a lot of resources for tapping into particularly with women and the skills that women have to offer.
Unless you bake some mean funeral potatoes.
I do have a recipe for funeral potatoes. I don't know that I would stake my whole reputation on them.
So it's interesting. The thing that we seem to keep on coming around to is the purpose why we're here, why we're at Ed Worship. And it seems like we keep on saying the sacrament, that the sacrament is like the reason for the season. That's the reason we get together, because everything else about getting together seems to have been stripped away from, you know, this pilot program back into church. Is that why you go to church, or is there something else that you would rather have from your Sabbath time together?
Well, for me, I would say, because I'm an extrovert, the primary reason that I have gone to church in the past has been the people. And the sacrament has been a secondary consideration. But honestly, in the last 3 months, without having access to the sacrament, the importance of the sacrament has come home to me in a way that it hadn't before. So I guess it was almost 2 weeks ago, my former bishop, so two bishops ago, and his wife came over, and we met them on the back deck, and we set up two different tables, and he blessed the sacrament for me, and it was beautiful. And then they stayed, and we talked for a long time. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I hate being in that position, though, of being the sort of vulnerable person who has to be visited or has to ask or has, you know, that it's humbling. And maybe I don't do humbling so well. That's an important spiritual lesson too. How do you come to terms with your own vulnerability? In that sense, it's kind of a systemic vulnerability that I resent, because I'm healthy or reasonably so. And I resent that other people can have the sacrament at home and I can't. I mean, frankly, just putting it out there, maybe that's an ugly kind of resentment, but it's an honest one. That is how I feel. So to have my former bishop come over and spend the evening was really lovely. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences I've had of the sacrament in a long, long time, because I had been without it for so many weeks. I don't even remember now what your original question was, Stephen. I'm sorry. Like,
it's okay. I enjoy.
That everything comes back to the sacrament. Yeah. Okay. That is, I think, where I'm coming now, because all of those other things have been stripped away. Like, I can't see the people that I care about in my ward in anything other than a fairly limited virtual way. We do still have book club, for example, even though we can't have Relief Society. We have some of the social things, which is nice, online.
And so you're a real advocate for the communal nature of church. You feel like getting together with people is a huge part of what church should be. And so you're rooting for us to be able to get back together physically. The virtual thing isn't giving you what you need, is basically what I'm getting out of you.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, it's secondary in desirability, but it's not terrible. I would way rather have that than have nothing, which is kind of what the church
has given us.
Yeah.
I'll say it for you.
Yeah. Well, I should contrast this also, because my husband's Episcopalian. And so most Sundays we have at least gone to his church, or to, like, this Sunday we didn't go to the church service that they have every week, but we went to a discussion group, Sunday morning discussion group that they have every week.
And you're talking about an online experience.
Right. I'm sorry. I guess we don't really have language yet.
No, not yet.
We'll catch up with Zoom. We Zoomed with people from his church to talk about systemic racism, actually. That was the topic for last week. So the online stuff that his church has been doing has been great. And also they started this called Redeemer Connector program, where there is essentially a neighborhood captain, and that the neighborhood captain for each group of, I don't know, five families or half a dozen maybe families will contact us and ask about what we want to be prayed to, people to be praying about. People have brought us treats. Someone brought us toilet paper, which was funny and very, very
devotion. Funny. Greater love hath no man than the toilet paper.
Right, right. And it was nice to see that kind of coordination, because frankly, that's usually something that the Mormon
community
does way better than the Episcopal community. And so it's been interesting to see how that has flipped in this particular situation.
Yeah, the same thing happened to me.
Really?
So every other week I go to the LDS church, and then the other week I go to a Unitarian congregation. Okay. And I'm all like, oh, the Unitarians, they're so sweet. They can't get anything together, but I just love them to pieces. And then the pandemic happens, and they had things up and going the next week. They were right on it. I was like, okay, I was wrong. You guys can get it together. And they are the church that I've had. I mean,
oh, interesting.
That's where I've gotten all of my spiritual togetherness, is being online with them. And I appreciated it a lot. And I would have gone to the LDS meetings happily if they would have been available. And that's why it still just kind of stays in my brain. Why didn't this happen? And the only thing I can think is they're just waiting it out so that we can all get together and none of us have an excuse to stay home and watch anything online.
It could be. I should say we did have one thing at the stake level 2 weeks ago. So there was a stake broadcast in exchange for, I don't know, at the same time that our stake conference was supposed to have been held. So that was okay. You know, I liked the way they had gotten multiple families involved. And so someone was commandeering Zoom and saying, now we're going to go to this family and they're going to play their cellos and whatnot. And now we're going to go over to the counselor in the stake presidency who will give us a talk. And then someone else will give us a prayer. Yep, it may be a little bit clunky, but our meetings are clunky. Our in-person meetings are not professionally done, and we're all used to that. It's fine. But we don't have to have everything all figured out and have this, you know, standard of performance. It's supposed to be a worship service and a time of reflection. And also sociality. So on Zoom, you know, I'm flipping through and saying, who from my stake is here? And, you know, looking at all the little boxes and everything. And I got a little lift in my heart just from seeing people.
And you send them little notes, right, in the chat box.
I guess I should exploit that feature. I haven't really done that.
You've had such a productive pandemic. You listened to all the books you've ever meant to. You listened to War and Peace, The Stand, Middlemarch, and even Infinite Jest? Oh, but you couldn't quite get through In Search of Lost Time? Oh well. And now, you're looking for something just as meaty, but maybe a little shorter? Lucky for you, Sunstone has a treasure trove of audible quality recordings of our best articles, essays, fiction, and poetry at patreon.com/sunstone. Head over and listen to a few of our free episodes, and then subscribe and get access to the best of Mormon thought and experience. Every episode is guaranteed to last less than 46.37 hours. That's our promise to you.
Yeah, that's one thing I do. So you wrote The Next Mormons, and you're working on the sequel. And I'm curious, do you have any insight into how all this has affected that particular demographic, how they're reacting to it or not reacting to it?
So by demographic, do you mean millennials?
Yeah, millennials.
Okay, millennials. Well, I do a little bit, but it's not research from me. So a couple of weeks ago in my column, I interviewed Richard Florey and Melinda Denton, who are social scientists, and they've been involved with the National Study of Youth and Religion Project since the early part of this century. So it's been like 16, 17 years of research. And the last book in the quadrilogy of research that has come out of this project has just been published. So those two were the writers of that volume. And it's essentially the project over the years followed this massive number of teenagers into adulthood. It's like the gold standard of social science when you can take the same population and have longevity where you were getting longitudinal data and interviews and finding out what happens to them. So it's really illuminating. And I asked them this question, what do you think is going to happen? And it's not good. Let's just, you know, in terms of organized religion and the success and the health of organized religion, it's not good. Even before the pandemic, like according to Pew, about 35% of millennials said that they were going to a religious service once a week. Actually, I think I have that stat right here, just so I'm not giving false information. Let me double check that. 35% of millennials born between 1981 and 1996 were attending church. Oh, and it's not even weekly, it's just once a month or more.
Huh.
It's like a low bar. Compared to 61% of those born before 1945. I mean, for Latter-day Saints, for Mormons, all of those stats are higher. There's a higher baseline. Mm-hmm. But we still see the generational difference where older people are more likely to go to church than younger people. And how that plays into the pandemic is sort of doubly interesting, because the older people who are the most stalwart churchgoers are the ones who really shouldn't be going to church, uh-huh. right? Because their health is most at risk. And millennials are more healthy and able to go to church, but also less likely to want to go to church.
And they can also use computers.
And they can, well, let's not underestimate elderly people. I've been so impressed during this pandemic at how well people have been out Zoom and Skype and yay grandparents.
That was one thing that I was wondering about all this, is that millennials are usually digital natives. So it almost seems like they would really embrace the idea of some online church. And, mm-hmm. you know, they wouldn't have to get ready. They wouldn't have to go anywhere. It would just be that 1 hour or whatever it is. And they're already comfortable in all of this.
And that's true. If they're inclined to go, then that's true. But fewer and fewer are inclined to go at all. And one of the things that, in just a totally preliminary way, what Dr. Florey and Dr. Denton were saying is that there's now also the possibility of channel surfing. So you log on for 5 minutes, and if it doesn't grab you, maybe you try another church. And then you try another church. You might have several different religious experiences all within the same hour on a Sunday or whenever, and not be terribly impressed with any of them. And what happens is that is just, I mean, fine, but in terms of building religious community, right. That is not a sustained model for building a religious community, to have that sort of shopping around.
And after a fashion, religious communities are kind of, I don't know, you should correct me if I'm wrong on this. It feels to me like religious communities are kind of the last bastion of community building.
Well, it's not the last, but it's
one of them.
Yeah.
And
it's one of them. We are bowling alone. As Robert Putnam put it, and that was what, 30 years ago that he wrote that book?
A long time ago.
Yeah. Community organizations, voluntary organizations have only declined since then. And the saddest part of that to me is not about necessarily organized religion having to change. I wouldn't say organized religion is dying, but I do think that the ones that survive are going to be the ones that are most adaptable and nimble to this situation. That's not the saddest part to me. The saddest part to me is the really alarming statistics about suicide, depression, and anxiety among young people and young adults. because that is at an all-time high, and they don't have the community resources. They don't have the really deep web of relationships that can provide optimal mental and emotional health. Mormons actually do better at that than the general population.
And it's because we're so community oriented and you're together, which is what makes this pandemic thing so interesting, is because then we see what we're like when we're not together. And so far to me, it's been a blank screen. I don't know what we're like when we're not together, because we're not together in any way. It's really strange.
Well, and that's a great point and a sad point. And it's even a little bit worse than that, because in some ways, all we have is social media.
Yeah.
I'm not dissing social media as a rule, but it's not the most kind of sustained way to get to know people. People are really curating their experiences and their lives. Or on the flip side, they're negative about everything. You know, like it's just an endless echo chamber of your own kinds of complaints. When I go to church physically, I'm often with people that don't agree with me about a lot of things, and that's good for me and it's good for them. You know, the genius of the Mormon ward model, this old parish model, is that we don't get to choose the people with whom we will worship. We are doing it by geography. And at least where I live, which is not Utah, where, you know, it might be your block and one other block, it's half of the city of Cincinnati altogether. Uh-huh. And we have a tremendous range of experiences and incomes and education levels, race. That's important. It's not easy. It's way easier to go to my husband's church, where like 90% of the people have a college education, which is astonishingly high. And people, you know, when I go to his church, I feel guilty for not composting, right? They have guilt too, but it's like totally different guilt. Anyway.
Composting guilt.
I have such composting guilt, yeah.
All right, so this does bring us to the question, kind of, what is worth the risk? I agree with you on all the things you say. I think community is tremendously important. I think we're losing it. And but right now it's really, really risky. At what point would you say, this is worth the risk to health?
Well, I'm going to answer that just personally. Okay. Yeah. I'm not an epidemiologist. I don't even play one on TV. I know, right? You've had me here under false pretenses thinking that I was an epidemiologist, and I'm totally not. I'm probably not going to go to church for a while myself personally, because I'm a lot more afraid of this virus, I think, than many of the people around me on both the right and the left, in the weird way that this virus has become politicized so quickly. I was very surprised in just the last 2 weeks to see how many of my dear friends have gone to protests, because many of those same people have been really cautious, and then suddenly caution goes to the winds. That doesn't mean that I don't agree with the cause of this. It means that I think we should be more careful about shouting in public right now, spreading the virus, not wearing masks, being, you know, in close proximity to people. Yeah. So I'm part of this clergy group here in Cincinnati, even though I'm not clergy. They let me come. Anyway, I don't know. They let me come. And we've been having meetings online to talk about Black Lives Matter and what we can do. And there's a lot that we can do just from being at home and, working the phones, planning for the future, writing letters. There's a lot that we can do that doesn't necessarily risk people's health. Anyway, in answer to your question, what will it take, I think, to get me back to church personally? It would take a longer and more correlated top-down list of things that we are going to do and not do. And I made a little list in advance of our conversation.
I want to hear this.
Thought we would get there. I would like to see our extra meetings be canceled for the moment or just go online. So because our culture is so much into having callings, and if you have a calling, you need to be there, I would like to give people the option of not coming to church. And the way that you do that is to not have young women and to not have primary right now, until, you know, until we have a really good solid decline in the virus transmission rate, the hospitalization rate, the death rate, all of those things. I think we should give people the option of not coming to church. And that means in our culture that we're going to cancel some of our ancillary meetings. Tell people they have to wear a mask. When they're in the building, they wear a mask. It's just basic, okay? Provide the masks. Hire professional cleaners, okay? Mm-hmm. There is no reason why our church cannot hire professional cleaners right now. I would love to see that all the time, but, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. But there's no reason why it can't happen now. All over the world, we can afford this. In the summertime, in the parts of the world where it is summer right now, let's meet outdoors. The virus transmission seems to be much less of a risk outdoors than when you're indoors in air conditioning. So let's have worship outside. People can bring their little lawn chairs, set them up in family groups 6 feet apart, and have sacrament meeting that way. It would be great. I don't want people's hands to be passing the tray. And we need to figure out, there are lots of different ways that we could do that.
Robots. But. I suggest robots.
I like that. The future is robotic.
Because you don't need to have the priest to pass the sacrament, right?
Or robot priests. Oh, yeah, I forgot where I was. Okay, no singing. For right now, and no wind instruments. Basically nothing that's going to be blowing your sputum wherever. We don't need that.
So electric guitars.
Yeah, this is the time, right? This is the time to have electric guitars in church. Or if we're being staid and Mormon, just piano, right? Or something like that.
Maybe
here's something that was in that guideline from other churches that I thought was pretty brilliant, and we could do so easily. You want to avoid situations where people are facing each other in passing, have one door that is the entry door and then one door that is the exit door. And that actually is, I think, pretty easy to implement and a good idea. Do you know
what
I'm saying?
My word is doing that.
You're already doing that.
Yay! My word is doing that, yes.
I think your bishop deserves a special commendation.
I'll let him know.
COVID commendation at this time. And then the last thing on my list here is to open up the gym. If we are meeting indoors, so that the, you know, the overflow is utilized and people can be even further apart. And of course, no hugging, no kiss. I know, right? I'm a hugger. I'm probably annoying with that, but I will restrain from hugging. Yeah, but I don't think I'm going to be going back for a little while. You know, we'll see. And if cases really seem to be low and we have the transmission under control, then great. But we need to stay flexible. We need to stay very aware if this virus is going to be with us for a while. I mean, I don't know. There are some promising indications that we might at least have ways to treat the virus and minimize some of the severity of the virus before we get a vaccine. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Because if we're just sitting around for, you know, another couple of years, probably, until we get a vaccine, could be very bad.
Then who would we be when we came back to church together? That would be really interesting.
Yeah. 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 So Phil and I, at the beginning of the pandemic, we both were reading pandemic-related books and then talking about them together, and then we switched. So one of them is Gina Colotta's book about the 1918 flu, just called Flu, very interesting. And the other one is The Great Pandemic, which is also very interesting. And something that I took away from, especially Colotta's book, is that in the aftermath of the 1918 flu, people just wanted to move on with their lives. They wanted to forget it happened. They wanted to focus on positive things. And also, it's hard to separate that from the end of World War One. You know, World War One ends, and generally after a war, people are eager to move on and put that behind them, put the trauma behind them. I can already see that happening now, and we're still right in the thick of it. Can you see that too? Like,
yeah. And I feel a little place in my heart that wants to do the same thing.
Oh, completely.
I've been inside for such a long time.
I know. I went shopping last week for the first time, and you know, it was very responsible. Mm-hmm. Only a few people can be in the store, and everyone had to wear a mask, and you know, that's great. It felt really good. It felt really good to do something like that, to do something that felt normal. I mean, I understand the impulse. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One thing that came to my mind as I was thinking about all this, I'm interested in seeing this in an opportunity sort of way. What sort of opportunities are being offered to us here? Because I know that we, you know, get the velocity of the institution going, and you can't stop. And if you stop anything, then it's going to be a disaster. Well, we've had the disaster. We mm-hmm. have stopped. What are some new things we could think about? And what are some of the new things we could build? And one of the things that has occurred to me is that most of the time that we spent in church previous to the pandemic, pre-pandemic, was that we spent most of our time doing cultural maintenance, like in church. We would tell the right stories. We would give the right interpretations. We would remind each other of the rules. And that was most of what went on.
Yeah.
If anybody ever shared, you know, personal experiences, it was usually to support the principle that was being taught. And so the parts of your life that were important were the parts where you showed how you were supporting this particular principle. And I think it would be really interesting if we used this time, instead of maintaining culture, to create connection between people. We were talking a little bit about this in the last live stream with Joanna Brooks and Misha McGriggs, where they were talking about Mormons are really good at getting together and getting to know each other. What if we made those into intimate spaces where we could finally ask each other, what is actually in your heart? Mm-hmm. And instead of getting, you know, a gospel sermon, we could hear what was in their heart. And I don't know, I was thinking about Zoom and Google Hangouts and stuff like that. And I realized from the church meetings that I've gone to, my Unitarian church meetings, that it's not so uncomfortable to get on a Zoom meeting in your own office or front room and talk with people. You don't see all of their eyes. They're not all looking at you. You aren't at the front. And I noticed myself being much more relaxed, much more willing to share. And I kind of wonder if we could dip into that, and if we couldn't get to know each other better now that we don't have the opportunity to be together. Could we create actual connection instead of just cultural maintenance? But of course, we'd have to get together virtually, and that's just not happening right now.
Well, but you've raised a good point, which is, how can we think creatively about how to do things differently? How can we be experimental? You know, experimentation is not something that Mormons ever want to, you know.
We stopped that back in 1890. We're done now.
Exactly, right. We figured it all out. We're done. Unfortunately, the world keeps changing, dang it. And that means that we also have to change. And it occurred to me recently that I've been, you know, on this whole thing about how we need to go back, when we go back to church, we need to all be wearing masks. And the irony of that is that I'm the one who is also saying that we wear these metaphorical masks at church that we never take off and never, yes, right. So I would like us to take, you know, put on the physical mask, but take off the other kind of mask that we use to protect ourselves and do that sort of virtue signaling and boundary maintenance that you were talking about. if church only exists to confirm what we already think that we know and to put on a show for other people in our Sunday clothes and, you know, all of our rhetoric about obedience, and what's the point, really? What's the point? If it's not a place where you can take off that other kind of mask and feel safe and feel like you belong, why are you there?
I think that that is a wonderful tagline. Put on the mask, take off the mask.
Right.
I like it.
All right. Well, hereby patented. I don't know what we would do with it.
Copyright it.
Yeah, there you go. Do you see what I'm saying, though? I mean, we are a people that can't seem to get together in that building without a lot of pretending. And
it's a big social dance. It's true. It's a big performance.
I mean, I'm old enough that I don't really do that anymore. You only have so many shits left to give when you get to be in your 50s. That's just the way it is, right? You just have...
The toilet's filled.
Yeah. Anyway.
This has been very illuminating, Jana. I appreciate you talking with me about this today. I really hope that we do find some opportunities here as Latter-day Saints. I feel bad that we seem to have been in a holding pattern this entire time. It doesn't feel Mormon to me. To me, Mormons are the people who go out, and even though you're right, we're not known for our creative thinking. We're good at doing things, and I just wish that we would have a little more room to get together and do things. I think we should trust us. I think that we should.
That's another motto. I like that. I think we should trust us.
I think we do okay. Who knows? All right. I'm going to end this then and push the end button so that all the people on Facebook are no longer watching us, but that will also
disconnect
you and me. But thank you, Jana. I'm really honored that you would take an hour out of your day to talk with us about this. And yay, church. I hope we get back together soon. And yay, your book. I really want to read it. When do I get to read it? Give me a date.
You mean the
new one?
Well, Ben and I have barely started writing it yet. Oh. I mean, we're doing the research and interviewing all the people, and it takes
a while. So the world can't end for another 5 years, so that Jana can get this book out.
Hopefully it won't be that long, or my brain will explode. Be bad.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us for this live stream. We'll have something for you next week too. I don't remember what it is. It won't be quite as fascinating as Jana, but I promise it will be really interesting.
It'll be better. All right. Good night.
I'm going to sign off. Thank you, Jana. We'll see you later.